This is my creative time. This is my therapeutic time. This is my alone time. I'm not doing woodworking to make a living.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. You just heard a few words from Clay Gerganis, hobbyist woodworker, who will be talking to us later in the program. Also, at the end of the program, we'll be giving a shout-out to Story City, which is heading off to the state baseball tournament today and will be hosting the world-famous bluegrass group Monroe Crossing at the Story Theater this Thursday night at 7 p.m. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, and my co-host is Cynthia McClure. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Susan, and all our listeners. We do have a full program this morning, and we're especially fortunate to have with us today the organizers of the Homeless Stand Down, taking place tomorrow, Tuesday, July 29th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event is for all military veterans who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. This is a coordinated effort to help, as illustrated by our guests today, Nicholas Grossman, ISU Police Department, and Jathan Shaquin, Veterans Service Coordinator for ISU. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. How you doing?
So where is this event happening?
So. It's going to take place at Brookside Park at the Maple Shelter, which is the first one when you come off of 6th Street on the south side of the park.
So it's the Maple Shelter, and it's going to be tomorrow. So what can people expect if they've never been to this event before?
Well, so we're going to see a number of resources coming. We've had tremendous support from the Department of Veterans Affairs. They'll be out there. Really, we'll have a number of volunteers that are coming to help out. The event is actually from 9 to 3 o'clock.
9 a.m. to 3 o'clock?
Yep, 9 a.m. to 3 o'clock.
Okay.
And so we'll just have a number of tents set up with different resources. People can get connected to benefits, VA benefits, have somebody out there for haircut. Nick, I'm sure you can think of
something. Yeah, we're having quite a few resources available for people there. And I should mention, too, or clarify anyway, that while this is meant for veterans, you don't have to be a veteran to get these services. So, but also, yeah, as Jathan said, we're having, like, haircuts. The VA is going to kick in an allotment of clothing. Mm-hmm. Some of it is specific for veterans that they can only give to veterans, but some of it is for everyone. We'll have medical and dental screenings there for people. We also have, Well, that's about all I can think of off the top of my head.
So right. is that mobile bus unit there for veterans?
Right.
We will. The vet center will be up here, from my understanding.
So how long has this homeless stand down been going on, this kind of event? Do you know?
Well, so in our community, we did a homeless stand down last year, and this is the second annual homeless stand down. And we're looking to continue to grow this event each year. And so this is the second year.
So second year we've had it here in Ames.
So is this event happening anywhere else in the country, or is this the only location?
Sure. Actually, there's been, over the last several years, a huge initiative from organizations like the Department of Veterans Affairs to specifically target veterans' homelessness. And so there's been a number of stand-downs across our nation.
I have to ask what a stand-down is. I'm not a military
So this is it's a great question. It's actually, we generated some great, we get that question often. And, I mean, my understanding of it would be that it's really just if we identify an issue, it's sort of, we're really standing down. We're calling all to take a Navy term, all hands on deck to address the issue. And so, what we're really trying to do is create greater awareness about homelessness in our community and really reach out to those individuals that might be in places of hardship or maybe transitioning through hardship. And so we're really just trying to engage our larger community in this effort.
How do you reach these people? I would imagine a lot of homeless people don't have radios, TV.
Sure. Well, I think just much like KHOI, you know, really trying to, it's that grassroots kind of community outreach. there are a number of organizations in our community, our local shelter, for instance, that every day really work with individuals that may be in states of homelessness or that transition. And so we're really just collaborating and asking people to really help out. On this Saturday, we actually, Nick and I, with some student veterans and a member of the the Ames Police Department, went out and actually did a point-in-time count where we went out to walk along areas where we thought there might be some campsites to actually connect with individuals to let them know about the event.
So you gave some face-to-face time to people that you thought were in crisis.
Right.
Yes.
So... who can come to this event besides, you know, what's all involved with this?
Yeah, basically anybody – or are you talking about volunteer-wise?
Well, anything. I mean, sure. I'm just – I wrote a general question, like, who can come to this event?
Well,
I mean
– basically anybody that's homeless or at risk of being homeless, becoming homeless, can come to the event. And we should also clarify that homelessness doesn't have to mean that you're, you know, somebody you know, hangs out in parks and things like that. It could be just somebody who doesn't have a permanent residence, somebody that, you know, couch surfs, you know, to use that phrase.
So somebody in crisis.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd like to add just what's been really sort of a privilege and honor for me in the capacity that I serve at Iowa State as the Veteran Services Coordinator is the ISU student veterans that have been very engaged in this issue. Last year, they wanted to support this event and did a camp-out event on Central Campus to raise awareness and raised a few funds to donate to the local shelter and our Veterans Community Gratitude Fund. I think that with our younger generation right now, that during that transition time, it is possible that you have one of our fellow brothers or sisters that might be just sleeping on somebody's couch from one night to the next and jumping around a lot. And so I think that's a really important point that Nick brings up.
I'm interested in that count that you did yesterday. How many people did you see?
So I'm sure Nick can add to this. I think that what surprised me personally was we recently had a kind of a flood, right? And so I think that really displaced a lot of people. So surprisingly, we didn't connect with as many people as we would have thought. I think they – but we were able to identify some different campsites, and we did connect with a couple.
I do think – and Jathan brings up a good point – that the flood probably changed the dynamic of it a little bit. We didn't find nearly the amount of campsites that we probably would have had we done this a month or two ago. But we did still – we identified – probably a dozen different individuals. So that's still quite a bit. And then the time of day, too, that you're doing it, there were a lot of mosquitoes out there. So I got to think, if I was sleeping in a tent in the woods, I wouldn't have wanted to stay out there very long either. So,
But it was really a it was a good learning opportunity for us, and it's something that I think we'll continue to do maybe at different parts of the year, because the idea behind it was, how do we really measure success from this event? And I think that it was important to kind of get that idea of I think it would surprise people to understand that we do have people that are in states of homelessness here in our community. And so I think that was really important to kind of get a sense of how many. And we'll continue to learn each year.
Do you think veterans are more prone to homelessness than – or the factors, I mean?
That's that's a good question, but probably one I'm not really able to answer without more research. I would say that sometimes what I see in the capacity that I serve, that transition can be very challenging sometimes. You know, it was for me personally. I mean, going from the military, where I was recognized for my accomplishments, had a sense of duty, into an environment that I felt didn't really always recognize those accomplishments. In fact, I was trying to figure out my position and where I fit in the context of our society. I think sometimes there can be transitional issues there for sure. I think there's just been a big focus right now with the Department of Veterans affairs to end homelessness? But it's a great question. I don't know, Nick, if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, without getting too political or anything like that, I would say that, you know, we're entering a pretty interesting time in our country's history because of the drawdown overseas, but the, you know, the Iraq war is basically over with and the Afghanistan war is winding down. So we are going to have a lot of veterans coming back from a full-time job to, you know, entering America's workforce. And, you know, some of those individuals hopefully will use their GI Bill and come to school. But, you know, job focus is going to be a big issue in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to state the obvious, but both of you guys are men. Are there any women veterans that are going to be involved in this to help support other sisters in the military?
Sure. I mean, just before we came in here, just a couple minutes ago, I got an email from one of our very active student veterans at Iowa State that's a female and very involved. And so absolutely. I think the greatest thing about, for me, I mean, about veterans, that we are a group of individuals that cut through all demographics. And, you know, when we're in the military and we're working, we have that common mission. And so I have to say that at least in our community, we have a very diverse group of individuals, and female veterans are all pretty much always engaged in that, and we need that. So I appreciate you bringing up the question.
Yeah, my daughter's a veteran, so I just Okay. Also, I have a – how do you build trust? Because if you guys went to places and they don't know you, you know, and you – you know, you're already connected with the system. You know, you're working with ISU, and you're an officer there, and they're outside it. So how do you build trust with that? I mean, they, you know, because I'm sure the people, when they hit that place, that bottom place, there's a lot of disillusionment.
So. Sure, I mean, in the context of veterans, I think actually I can draw on an example. I think it was out of Phoenix, Arizona. Maybe last year there was actually a platoon that got together in the, you know, outside of the military context, and they actually went out and did a point in time count. And they must, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think it was something like they engaged like 70, 75 individuals that were, maybe it was a little bit higher, individuals that were homeless. And they had such an incredible success rate when they connect with the veterans, you know, to get them actually in housing. And I think it does mean a lot when you're a veteran and you come in contact with another veteran. I was going to say, it's probably I joke sometimes that we have our own language in the military, right? And sometimes that can be vulgar. And so I was going to make a comment that, you know, drop inappropriate word. But there is this I think instant rapport that happens sometimes. And We actually handed out some items that we thought would be helpful the other day when we went out, and we put a flyer inside of it and like a water bottle that we thought.
Yeah, that would be very useful, you know, for you know, individuals out, you know, in on their own. I think it was just as useful as far as a team building exercise, like a rapport building exercise for that student veteran group too.
Sure.
I mean, we got a lot of positive comments from our student vets that helped out with this as well.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
You're with the ISU Police Department.
Correct.
And how do you interface with veterans in a way that might be different than the office that
sure,
Zaysten is in?
I'm kind of wearing two hats here, I guess, so to speak. But that's a good point. We had an officer from the city police also that helped out with this. And initially, when he showed up, he looked very much like a police officer, and we talked to each other, you know, kind of over to the side, and thought it would be best if he kind of dressed down a little bit, as like I was dressed down as well, just because, you know, some individuals that are homeless out and about have dealt with police in negative ways as well, and we certainly don't want to give the image that we're out there, you know, enforcing laws or anything like that, because basically what we are doing is just trying to get create awareness of this and just be out there. And it just happens to be that, yeah, I'm a police officer, but I'm also a veteran, and I'm also, you know, I do care what happens to these individuals and want to help get them resources. So
how much local support have you received for this event?
I think the you know, our intent this year was really in engaging, you know, Iowa State University. We had so many departments that really came out and were, you know, working alongside the Story County Veterans Affairs. I think the level of collaboration has been wonderful. We've seen a lot of people engaged in this. So I think it's already, I think our efforts have already grown, and that's what we continue to hope to do. So
it's bigger than last year's event that I believe was at the church here, the Methodist church.
I think there's our greater community really is aware of it. I mean, yeah, definitely.
So what geographic area are you serving? Because KHOI, we hit six counties, and you've talked about ISU, and you've talked about Story County Veterans Affairs. So if there's somebody listening from a different area that's, you know, ironically homeless because their geographic area is in flux, who can you serve?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. You know, one of the things in talking with, Vic Moss and our local shelter is that we actually, he sees a lot of people that come from outside the Ames area. I mean, Boone County. I mean, so we actually, when we drew up our kind of transportation plan, included some of the surrounding cities, Boone, Story City, I think, all kind of around, that people will have an opportunity to come attend this.
So what transportation plan? Can you explain that?
As far as, like, locally, we worked out a agreement with SciRide, and they generously provided us with some free passes so we can get people around. We also have some of those 15-passenger vans.
Yep.
And those are from the VA themselves.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so we have drivers that will volunteer all day long as well at some of the predetermined pickup sites that we've established.
So you'll go out and give veterans and pick them up if and where are some of these predetermined sites?
They're going to mostly coincide with bus sites as well, but they basically the downtown part of Ames is about the most applicable spot that we've had.
So we have, I think, and I don't have the list in front of us, but I think one of the libraries, like in I think it was, did we go as far as Zeering?
I'd have to look at it.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Is there a place for people to look for this? You know, go online and
what we've actually done is posted it in the communities themselves. Okay. In those, so people will in areas. So it's sort of like on a grassroots level. I think people are. We don't have the list in front of us right now.
It is online though too. It is on the Story County site. I just talked to Luke about that Friday, so I know it.
Perfect.
Well, I have a question. Do you have any follow-up stories about good things that have happened from your previous homeless stand-down days?
Personally, I think just to see our students so engaged and really wanting to be involved in this has been really wonderful for me. I think we have a increasingly, you know, our community continues to grow. I mean, higher education is often the first place that veterans are reintegrating back into the civilian context. And I'll say that I lost my train of thought. I think because our community is so strong, I mean, I do remember that it got back to me that we had a student that was from another university that was actually living out of their car. And we were able to reach out to them through that community and really get them into a better place and connected with resources. So that's a great success story for me. And I think that's something that's really important is that, you know, as just citizens, there's times that we'll come in contact with somebody that might be in hardship and learning a little bit more about some of the different resources that are available. Every day there are people that are working hard, like Vic Moss at our local shelter, and, you know, knowing about that resource so we can help. But there's a lot of success stories that have come out of it, I think.
Nick, did you have something to add to that?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, this is only the second year that we've had it in Ames, but you know, a lot of other communities do share similar stories, I'm sure, that we've had as well. All over the country. They've been happening all over the country.
So you guys are offering, let's list some of the things that you're offering. You're offering haircuts.
Mm-hmm.
You're offering some VA benefits and counseling and medical and dental, which can be very important for somebody that doesn't have the resources. You're offering, I'm assuming, a meal.
Sure, absolutely.
And clothing. Mm-hmm. Resources to probably go to ISU or if they have the VA benefits.
Sure. So, I'll be there, of course. You know. Yeah. Certainly, I can always talk about different, you know, opportunities if people mm-hmm. are interested in going to school.
So what other list of things?
Job placement services would be a big one, too. I'm not sure if which company, if it was Manpower or who is going to be there exactly. But I know we have somebody there to counsel about jobs.
I have a question about jobs.
Sure.
I presume it's still true that there are I don't know what they're called. A couple points is what I'm familiar with, that there are incentives for employers to hire veterans. Mm. And can you tell me about any of these? Is this still in effect?
You know, I think that's done individually by businesses. I can tell you, for one thing, like with the police department, we do have that. Like, there's veteran preference when you fill out an application, and that goes from everything from like a part-time, like a parking ticket enforcement person to like all the way up to a certified officer.
So, yep. I think that businesses receive some tax credit incentives for hiring veterans. There's been a lot of initiatives here in Iowa. We even have right now the Iowa Home Base Initiative. A lot of businesses coming together, to really try to target veterans in terms of employment opportunities. So there's some really great initiatives right now.
So, but this event, even though it's the homeless stand-down and your focus is on veterans, anybody can attend if they're in crisis?
Yeah, absolutely. Or just anybody that's facing homelessness or is currently in homeless, whether they're a veteran or not.
And children can come,
yep.
too.
Okay, so this is not just for adults.
No.
So this is for families then.
Absolutely.
So people in crisis. And this is going to be, again, at Maple Lodge at Brookside Park mm-hmm. from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow.
That's right.
That's, here in Ames. And do you guys have anything that you want to follow up with and let the people know? Because this is kind of
sure.
this is an important thing because we're in summertime right now, and I think Iowa has five seasons with all the weather changes very quickly.
Sure.
So.
I think if anybody's interested in helping out, certainly I'm putting out a time, to muster, as we'd say in the military, at 7:45. So 7:45 in the morning.
So
if you want to come out and help set up. We definitely need some help setting up tents. At the end of the day, we'll take down and stuff, and we could use some help. So there's always opportunities for those that really want to be a part of this and involved. But really, we just want to engage the community to really think about this issue in ways. When we started thinking about things like going out and do a point in time count, when we started thinking about growing this event, it really was about trying to create that sustainable change in our community and really try to this event doesn't just end, it's not just a one-day event, that this is something that we're hoping to really find ways to continue to provide that support.
I'm glad people. You said that, because that's kind of, one-hit wonders is, you
sure.
try one big event and it's fixed, and it's, this is ongoing for people in crisis, so.
Absolutely.
It'll become more apparent, too, as the year goes on, especially, when we get closer to fall and the weather starts to change. I think then it'll definitely become more necessary. It's not like, Christmas happens once a year. Well, it's an all-year-long issue.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Vic Moss at the homeless shelter here in Ames deals with it every day. So,
absolutely.
But how do you plan to continue your engagement with the people that you meet tomorrow who come and, they're happy to know about all these services, but then is there a way that they can reconnect with you?
You're talking about people that come for the services?
Yeah.
Okay. I think networking, quite honestly, is the best way to mm-hmm. accomplish all that. I know we're doing like a live Twitter feed of the event as well, and we've got things on our department Facebook page just to help get information out there. But, when it comes to actually getting the word out to individuals that are homeless, it's going to take us physically going out there like we did yesterday. So as long as we're able to continue doing that on some level, and, Jathan and I talk I don't know, at least a couple times a week probably because we have very similar jobs in that, right? So
you got to build trust and keep the trust going and be connected with people.
Correct.
Absolutely. And I think the more people that know that there are these great resources out there, you know, Luke Jensen and Brett McLean are at Story County, do a great job. Since we've created the Veterans Center at Iowa State, some of our younger generation that are getting connected to those resources has increased. So it really is about that networking and that working together as a community to address the issue.
And this is Jason Chiquin. He was the Veterans Services Coordinator for ISU. And Nicholas Grossman, ISU Police Department. They're both going to be involved with this homeless stand down tomorrow at Brookside Park, Maple Lodge, tomorrow, 9 a.m., if you want to get involved and become part of this wonderful event. He is having the call of, what do you call that when you get to?
Oh, I said muster. Yeah, 0745. Yeah. Rendezvous.
Yeah, rendezvous, you know, coordinate your clocks and show
That's
up
right.
at the...
24
Maple Shelter.
Hours from now.
That's right. Exactly.
Almost exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, and can people, if they have something to donate or give, are you guys, you know, is this an event you guys could receive things within reason? I mean, clothing-wise or, you know, what are you looking for besides that help? Or if somebody has a job, you know, they want to find an employee for, I mean.
Sure, I think it would probably. We're all going to be wearing red shirts tomorrow. I should say that. So
okay.
if you're interested in volunteering, show up. But a lot of us will have that. So I would just, if somebody has something that they want to contribute, just to connect with one of us. Obviously, I don't think we've talked a lot about being in a position to receive a lot of donations and stuff at this time. But that doesn't mean that we can't find a place if somebody have some ideas, some things that they want to donate. I would just say to coordinate with. You know, Nick, myself, or Luke Jensen. And
yeah. Okay. So Jason Chiquin at ISU, he's a service coordinator there at ISU, and you can look up his name on the website. And Nicholas Grossman, ISU Police Department. And Luke Jensen is part of this, but he didn't make it today. His number is 515-956-2625. Thank you, guys. I mean, this sounds like a great event. It's going to be tomorrow again. Maple Lodge, Brookside Park here in Ames from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And if you can make it, that'll be great. If, you know, there's a lot of events like this happening around the country. Check your local county coordinator, Veterans County Coordinator, because every county in Iowa does have a Veterans Coordinator. And check with them to see what's going on. But if you don't have an event happening, these guys won't say no. So,
well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity and for helping us spread the word.
Well, anytime you guys have something to share.
Okay.
So let us know here at KHOI.
And we have a little transitional music.
American Hearts by A.A. Brony. So he's a great musician, and I love this song.
We were raised by wolves, and we are still wild. When the troubled wind blows, and in the TV's blue light, four assassins will lie everywhere, just a going down slow. So don't tread on me, for I am your brother. I was born with an American heart. And don't tread on her, for she is your sister. She was born with an American heart. And all the people you meet down in the streets may be good, but they don't wanna know. So they cover their eyes for who wants to be sad. Life is sweet at the bottom of the sea. And don't tread on me, for I am your brother. I was born with an American heart. And don't tread on her, for she is your sister. She was born with an American heart. And the mothers will cry, fathers stay up all night with a worry that goes to the bones. And if your God makes war, then he's no God I know, 'cause Christ would not send boys to die. And don't tread on me, for I am your brother. I was born with an American heart. And don't tread on her, for she is your sister. She was born with an American heart. And don't you get low as hell when the peace dove is felt by men with the blackest of minds. And above the din, let the sighing begin, as we're bound for the longest of days. So don't tread on me, for I am your brother. I was born with an American heart. And don't tread on her, for she is your sister. She was born with an American heart.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Cynthia McClure.
For the first half of our program today, we've been talking with Nick Grossman, ISU Police Department, and Jason Chiquin, who is the Veteran Service Coordinator with ISU, about the Homeless Stand Down. And for more information about this event, you can contact Luke Jensen with the Story County Veterans Affairs at 515-956-2625. That's 515-956-2625, the number for the Story County Veterans Affairs. Or you can contact your County Veterans Affairs Coordinator, because all of Iowa counties have one. There's a toll-free line that I found. It's called Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255.
This event, the Homeless Veterans Stand Down, is open to the public and is located at Maple Lodge Brookside Park in Ames from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, July 29th. And it is open to anyone who is either homeless or in danger of becoming homeless.
Yeah, this is they're including everybody if you're in a crisis, including families, which I find really heartwarming and very nice. Now we'll be turning to a very different topic, hobby woodworking. So what does that mean, Susan?
Hobby woodworkers can be just about anybody with an interest and access to some tools. My interview today is with Clay Gerganis, a man whom I've known since he was my neighbor in the early 60s when he was preschool. And I think his stories will resonate with a lot of our listeners, all the way from those who were in Mr. Van Winkle's shop class at Welsh Junior High decades ago, to those who, like Clay, are regular attendees of the Ames Woodworkers Club, which usually meets on the third Tuesday of each month at the Environmental Health and Safety Building at ISU. We'll start out with a visit to Clay's shop, including some details that indicate the innovation possible in putting a shop together. Putting together a shop is a very individual thing, and I think for almost every woodworker, it's a very meaningful and exciting thing. There's a lot more to it than deciding what you want and going down to buy it. But after our tour of his shop, he'll tell us his story, beginning in that junior high shop class and extending to what woodworking means to him now. Well, I'm here with Clay Gerganis in his shop, in his home in Somerset, which to the outside would look like a double garage. Clay, would you describe your shop?
I tell people it's no longer a garage, it's a shop. It's about 24 by 24. I have a table saw, a radial arm saw, a jointer, a drill press, router table, lots of hand tools, bandsaw, sander, a lathe, which is my latest purchase. One of the reasons I just bought the lathe was because I always felt very uncomfortable throwing scraps away. And so what I will be able to do with the scraps now are to glue them up and turn bowls. And let's talk about how this all started. Well, back in 2010, when we had the flood, we received water in our basement. Our sump pump couldn't keep up, and we had water in the basement. And I have a 75-gallon fish tank. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, the fish stand is ruined. I really think it'd be neat to build a fish stand and then make an entertainment unit with matching end tables. Because that's something you can't buy at a furniture store. A fish tank stand, an entertainment unit, and two matching end tables. All I need is a table saw. Well, here we are, 2014, with a full-blown shop.
I'm so fascinated with the beauty of your shop. Like those doors. And I guess that's just masonite with a pine strip around it. But it's so neat looking.
And my Formica counters, tops.
Yeah, including on your saw. That must have come that way, right?
Well, I made that. I made that top. Okay, the radial arm saw needed a new top. And what had happened is I was at an auction for a cabinet business that was going out of business. And I noticed that the fella had most of his surfaces that he worked on were Formica, or I should say laminate, because there's Formica and there's Wilsonart. They're the big two countertop. And it's really nice to work on because it's very slick, but yet when you put pressure on it, it sort of has a stickiness to it. I don't know if that makes sense, but it holds the bore in place. The other thing is you get glue on it, you take your putty knife and you scrape it off and you take a little water to it and it cleans right up. And it's so durable. So that's how I ended up with the Formica tops. And actually, my router table, I made that in the spring, and it's actually made out of a plank of countertop that I bought at Lowe's. And then the frame is made out of a 2x4s that I put together with a Craig jig.
Yeah. No, I'm also looking at your drill press. Did you make that?
What should I call it? The bed of the drill press is a countertop. Well, it's made. It's got a Formica laminate top on it. Yeah. This was an old banquet table top, and I made a new stand for it because my back was hurting from bending over. Because the other one was about waist high.
Yeah.
So my back was always, you know, from sanding, you know, on it, I was hurting. And so I built this base, and then the top came off an old banquet table. Well, my start date is about 1973, about seventh grade. We had wood shop, and that was sort of a natural for me. I always loved wood shop back in with Keith Van Winkle. I say that I learned more from Keith Van Winkle about woodworking than I ever thought I knew until I got older. This is my creative time. This is my therapeutic time. This is my alone time. I'm not doing woodworking to make a living. I make a living by working at the university. I do woodworking as a stress relief. I do woodworking as a brain exercise, because you have to think about how things go together and how much, you know, this dado joint is going to be so deep, so I got to add on so much, and, you know, the mathematical things like that. And so that's what it is. You know, for the people I've made things for, I ask for the money to pay for the materials. And as a friend of mine told me, every new project deserves a new tool. There's always something you're going to need. So I'm not trying to make a living. I'm mainly wanting to pay for what I'm doing so I can have my therapy.
So cost of materials plus cost of tools.
A small amount of tools, like a drill bit, and, you know, glue and stuff. So I wake up in the middle of the night with an idea, and I can't sleep over it because I just love doing this so much.
Well, then how do you find the person who wants to pay for the materials for you to make it?
Well, a lot of it is word of mouth. And a lot of people want to see what I have made, so I direct them to my website. My son created the website, www.blindguywoodworking.com.
Blind Guy Woodworking. You didn't say anything about that. Where did that come from?
Well, I am totally blind. And actually, we were trying to think of names and, you know, make it really catchy, you know, with a subtle hint. And a friend of mine said, you know, just stop the subtlety. Just say Blind Guy Woodworking.
So how does a blind guy do woodworking, and where did you learn?
Well, first of all, I want people to understand, when I talked about Keith Van Winkle, I wasn't blind. I lost my eyesight in about 1984 from complications of diabetes. And I've done woodworking before I lost my eyesight. Now, when I lost my eyesight, I went down to the Department for the Blind in Des Moines and went through rehabilitation. And when you go through rehabilitation, you do cane travel, you learn how to cook, you learn how to shop, you learn how to read Braille, you know, all those things. They call them skills and techniques of daily living. And one of the things they have you do is work in the wood shop. Now, for me, that was a go-go thing because I loved working in the first place. But everyone builds a project, and when I was there back in 84, it was all kinds of different things. Grandfather clocks, backgammon tables, and one guy made a little cannon. But the wood shop is not to make you into a woodworker. The wood shop is to teach you confidence. Now, people ask me, how do I keep from cutting my fingers off? And, well, basically, I just tell them, I don't put my fingers in the saw. But the reason people cut their fingers on a saw is because the biggest reason is they get in a hurry. The theory at the Department for the Blind is, if I can cut a piece of wood safely, then what else can I do with my life? Okay, it's a confidence builder. But as far as cutting a piece of wood, it has to do with knowing where your hands are in relationship to the blade, never taking a chance. You don't get second chances. My daughter's friend said, I can't believe your dad hasn't cut his fingers off yet. And I said, there's no yet. It's using the right techniques. A lot of people take their guards off their saws. Those guards are there for a reason. And the guard is, you know, if you slip, if your push stick slips off your board, you're in the blade. If your guard's not there, you cut yourself. If your guard's there, it'll protect you from getting into the blade. So I never cut without a guard. I'm nervous. But I think that I'm more safe than a sighted person. Sorry, folks. Because every time I cut a board, I think about the relationship of my hands toward the blade. wood selection is an interesting process, and more so making sure that I don't think that one wood is another wood and accidentally mix it up. That's where my daughter comes into play. She's like my assistant, and I've trained her. She's picked up on it very well, and I'll say, "Hey, Alia, come out here and check this out." And she'll, "That's walnut. That's maple." Da, 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 you know, she knows her woods pretty well now. But I also buy my wood from a local supplier, from a guy over by Nevada, and he's pretty good to me. He picks his wood out pretty, you know, really well, and I've really never had any real major problems with it. It's always been very good quality wood. And the aquarium stand has a door on the right and a door on the left with an open space in the middle.
I think it's hard to visualize what 75 gallons of water looks like. What are the dimensions on this?
Now you're testing me. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll use this fancy tape measure I've got here. And see, when you're a blind guy, you got to have a fancy tape measure. And I've got a talking tape measure.
0.75 inches.
So, this is...
3 1/16 inches.
Roughly...
49 15/16 inches.
49 15/16. Almost 50, right at 50 inches. Wide by...
1/8 of an inch. 31 1/4 inches.
31 1/4 inches tall. And...
19 15/16.
About 20 inches deep. Now, if you are having trouble getting an image of this, you can see this on www.blindguywoodworking.com. And this is a pretty neat little tool. Yeah, I can also do it in
0 inches, millimeters,
centimeters,
0.0 centimeters, meters, 0.000 meters,
feet and inches,
inches.
It's got memory on it. I wish it had subtraction. I found out about this through the Department for the Blind. I thought, what a gimmick. And now I have two of them. And it's accurate to 1/16 of an inch.
Where do you get your ideas?
A lot of the furniture I've done and things I've made things to match other furniture. Like, my daughter wanted me to make a loft for her. And I really didn't want to just screw some 2x4s together. So I wasn't sure how to make this a little bit more unique, but one night I dreamt about it. So I had to get up and process my dreams, and that's how we came up with the design for it.
And then she has some other furniture too, right?
There is a desk that that was the second thing I made after I set up my shop, and that was made to match her mother's furniture that she has now that her mother had when she was a child. So the dresser in her bedroom was once her mother's, and I made the desk to match that, and then we made the loft to match the desk and the dresser. I've told this to many people that blindness sort of gave me a direction in life. And I've talked and I've thought about it, and if I could get my eyesight back, would I want it back? I don't know, Susan. I don't know. It would have to be a substantial gain. It would have to be where I could function as a sighted person. I don't want shadows. I don't want to sort of see. I found direction when I lost my eyesight, and in a way, I think that, you know, there's a silver lining in every tragedy, and the silver lining in this one is that I'm living a life that I probably never would have before I lost my eyesight.
Thank you.
Well, actually, my wife and I, we met during when we got our seeing eye dogs together.
You are the sunshine of my life. That's why I'll always be around.
You are the apple of my eye. Forever you'll stay in my heart.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And we just finished talking with hobbyist and woodworker Clay Gerganis from his shop. Earlier, we received a very important update about the veterans stand down, which is for veterans, but also for anybody in crisis, which is open to the public and is located at the Maple Lodge, Brookside Park, Ames, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow. That's Tuesday, July 29th.
Now, we'd like to give a shout-out to Story City, whose Roland Story Norsemen are heading to the state baseball tournament. The game's at 2 p.m. in Principal Stadium in Des Moines today, and there'll be a pep rally and send-off at the baseball field in Story City at 10:30 a.m. Good luck.
And this is a big week for Story City. World-class bluegrass entertainers, Monroe Crossing, will appear in concert at the Story Theater Grand Opera House at 512 Broad Street in Story City, Thursday, July 31st. That's at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at Story City Herald at 512 Broad Street and Story City Chamber of Commerce at 524 Broad Street in Story City. For more information, you can call this number at 515-733-4551 or 515-733-4318. Advance tickets are recommended. Let's close our program with a sample of Monroe's Crossing. They're playing a bluegrass classic, Orange Blossom Special.
I've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we have learned about Homeless Veterans Step Down, an event for homeless veterans, veterans in danger of becoming homeless, and homeless residents of Story County, which will be at Maple Shelter at Brookside Park tomorrow, Tuesday, July 29th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The organizers, Nick Grossman, ISU Police Department, and Jathan Shaquin, Veterans Services Coordinator, were here to tell us about it. For more information, contact the Story County Veterans Office at 515-956-2625 or ljensen@storycounty.com. Our other guest was Clay Gerganis, hobbyist woodworker, whose website is www.blindguywoodworking.org. Of more general woodworking interest, go to Ames Woodworkers. Your hosts for today have been Susan Franzen and
Cynthia McClure. And Local Talk is engineered by Rick Morrison. Music you heard today included American Hearts by A.A. Brony. You Are the Sunshine of My Life by Stevie Wonder from a CD Number Ones, Orange Blossom Special by Monroe Crossing from their CD On the Road, and our theme music is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you'll find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows. Local Talk is a radio production ready training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and
see you again on the radio.